Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Before we get into Seth's question from the press conference with Bill O'Brien over the weekend, that actually got laughter on the transcript for the press conference, in parentheses, they put the word laughter. It was that funny a question. Real quick, one other observation I didn't get to, Seth, because I think people like to hear, okay, who's looking good? Who's not, you know, especially the important players maybe that are looking to make a leap. Tytus Howard has looked really good at right tackle so far. I was focused in on him for a few plays in the 11-on-11. When pressure was coming, it was not coming off of the right side when the ones were in there. I'll just say So Tytus Howard has looked good, yeah.
Now, J.J. Watt hasn't been out there at all.
He has not. No, that is true. He has not had the supreme test yet, which is 99 across from him.
I would like to, just for the sake of that experience, Tytus Howard's going to lose some reps to J.J. Watt,
right,
which makes everything else. The nice thing about going against somebody like J.J. Watt in practice is that it does make some of your opponents on Sunday feel like almost – like it feels like you're going through a practice.
Yeah.
That's how it was. Well, like whenever I had a really good offensive lineman on the other side of me, it made me better that year. It's as simple as that.
If the first three practices are any indication, he's not going to see much of J.J. Watt at practice leading up to the season. Yeah, J.J.
Tytus will have to savor each moment that J.J. kicks his ass.
That's right.
Because it'll make him better, you know?
That's right. So I think this was Friday, Seth, that you asked Bill O'Brien this question. It was on the heels of Kima Sivaram, the rookie cornerback for the Seahawks, getting cut by the Seahawks for trying to sneak a woman into his hotel room at the team hotel. The woman was dressed in Seahawks gear, reportedly trying to disguise herself as a player going into the building. Yeah.
So I had asked O'Brien an actual football question.
You did. I was going to make that clear, that you weren't just some clown on the press conference there to ask funny questions.
Yeah, I'm not in there like PFT commenter. Who's my hero? I'm not PFT commenter. I'm not going to try to be him.
Yeah, so you had asked him a very good question. I didn't include the audio just because, you know, sake of time and all, but you asked him a really good question about balancing his old school sensibilities of wanting to, you know, make guys run wind sprints for punishment and stuff with the new school of the analytics of health and load management and things like that. Was a really good question. He had a really good answer. I thought it was a very introspective answer where he said, hey, a couple of years ago, I probably thought this way, and now I get this data after practice, and now I think this way. It was a really good answer. But the headliner was this question from Seth.
Also, follow up, what's the most creative way you've ever seen a player try to either sneak a woman into the hotel or sneak himself?
Maybe offline, I can tell you a story from last training camp where we had to move on. But I have not seen that too many times. But these guys have done a good job.
Which player it was?
No, you wouldn't even know. They were low on the depth chart. But we, you know, I think we're staying. You know, most of our guys are staying at home, and then we have a hotel available to them if they want it. And our guy, we got a great locker room. Our guys have been really good, and you know, we haven't had to deal with any of those issues.
So Seth, I did what I think is normal Payne and Pendergast protocol in a situation like this, which is I went back to the transaction list for the Texans starting in the middle of July, going through the end of training camp. And I tried to go through all the names of guys who were sort of random cuts by themselves, you know, not waived with an injury settlement, not waived with a group of guys to get down to the roster number. Just guys who were waived sort of randomly, and it was really hard to find anybody. Like a lot of the guys who get waived in training camp as a one-off are getting waived to make room for other guys. You know, one guy gets cut so they can bring in Brian Anger as the as a punter competition for Trevor Daniel. Another guy gets cut because they need to bring in a third or fourth quarterback in Jordan Te'amu. You know, guy gets cut because they have too many bodies at wide receiver. They need a body at cornerback because of injuries. It was really, really hard to find anybody that didn't have a good reason to be cut.
Right. Well, and if it's somebody that's on the fringe, too, then, okay, that's going to be the first to go. But you're right. Even the actual reason these individual guys were cut. He was it was a pretty good little it was a good job by O'Brien. He's accurate when he's saying that it wouldn't have been anybody we know. Because I'm looking at Drew Lewis, A.J. Handy, Tyvus Powell, D.J. Coker, kind of I know him.
Steven Lewis,
I kind of know him. Johnny Dwight, who?
Yeah.
So it's there's no, as far as we know, the KC3 continues to be the most notorious of reasons that Texans players were eventually cut.
Conduct cuts, we'll call them.
Because those were, okay, let's remember who the KC3.
Can you name them?
I always want to say Swearinger, but it wasn't Swearinger. It was the LSU. Sam Montgomery.
Sam Montgomery.
It was Jordan Jefferson.
Nope.
Willie Jefferson. And then it was your Notre Dame fella.
Sierra Wood.
We can't even make light of that because
he's
gone
in
on
big
to
trouble,
be wrapped up in some really
he's
bad stuff.
He's in big trouble, yeah.
But they were the real story on that has never officially come out. They still refer to it as cigarette type
black
substance.
And black and milds. Right, yeah, they were black and milds is what we were told, yeah.
Imagine if they were gotten in trouble actually for just smoking nothing other than gas station black and milds. Like, hey, I saw you with us. I heard you had a skull in the back of the bus. That's it. You're out of here.
Let me ask you this, especially if you're in a hotel that doesn't allow smoking at all.
Yeah.
Could it be that those three guys did enough things to get sideways with Gary Kubiak back in the day to where that was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Given the fact that Sam Montgomery has yet to play a snap in the NFL, I think there's a good chance.
Given that Willie Jefferson was with Josh Gordon when they passed out at a Jack in the Box drive-thru or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, Sierra Wood, no laughing matter.
Well, and Sierra Wood, from a strictly football standpoint, Sierra Wood had a chance to play that game.
Aaron
was banged up. Ben Tate got injured. Yeah.
Yeah. Sierra Wood probably a career error by him.
That might have been an incredible fork in the road for him.
Yep.
Like, just that day, who knows? If he goes in, if he was active and he'd gone in and ran for 150 yards, it might have changed everything.
Yeah, yeah. So, because that was the game where Arian went out for the rest of the season with back surgery. He would have gotten plenty of activity. All right, so the bottom line is we aren't really able to identify which guy may have gotten cut from the Texans for something similar to Kima Sivirand.
And I was thinking about, could we go through, maybe we should take suggestions on the text line. Which current Texan or maybe NFL player from around the league would be most likely to? I'd say, you know who it would be? I think the young player that most likely get nailed for this right now is Rob Gronkowski. I think Rob Gronkowski, who's just YOLO Gronk right now, who probably doesn't give a damn about anything, and he's just happy to be alive and playing football in Florida for a coach who's almost like 180 degrees different than Bill Belichick. Like, Gronk might, kind of like when you take a class in college that's supposed to be an easy class and you end up getting a C- in it because you just don't take it seriously. That's probably what's going to happen with Gronk. He'll actually figure out a way to piss off Bruce Arians.
Okay, here's an angle, Seth. Whatever the big board looks like for that kind of thing, like whether it's a current Texan or an NFL, I think it's really hard to find a current Texan. Easterby and O'Brien have done a pretty good job of kind of stacking the locker room full of guys where it's really hard to find the guy who's going to sneak somebody into the hotel. But if we're encompassing the whole league, whatever that big board may look like, if Dez Bryant has a successful workout and tryout with the Baltimore Ravens and becomes a Baltimore Raven, does he immediately electronically get inserted to the top of the odds board in Vegas for this thing?
Yeah,
I mean, I know he's a veteran guy. I know he's like 33 years old now.
Well, it depends, because in Dallas they had that, like, a chaperone for him 24/7.
Right.
So is he going to agree and abide to, which was Dez Bryant's people's idea, by the way.
It's why I put him at the top of the list, because in Dallas he had a chaperone 24/7.
Odell Beckham Jr. has been pretty quiet. I'll say, I think Odell Beckham Jr. deserves at least a little bit of credit for going through last miserable season last year and relatively keeping his mouth shut, didn't he? I mean, there were trade rumors that I don't think he started, but then he kind of fanned the flames a little bit. But I, for the most part, Odell Beckham Jr. has been way quieter than I thought he'd be in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't think Odell's ever going to be totally quiet. Like, you're never going to get Odell, I think, to treat a season like he had last year, like DeAndre Hopkins did, the Brock Osweiler season. That DeAndre Hopkins was able to keep it together during that Brock Osweiler season remains in the pantheon of number one wide receivers, remains one of the great sort of stoic, he never flinched that entire season and lashed out with Brock Osweiler as his quarterback. It's the only subpar season DeAndre Hopkins has had his whole career. Was able to keep from doing that had to be like holding in a sneeze for 5 months.
What was the most notable DeAndre Hopkins flip out? Hoyer when he said, get him the bleep out of there.
Yeah, Hoyer in the playoff game.
Which was more of a medical diagnosis than anything else. I think it's almost, I think I was one of the first people to say, hey, I think Hoyer still had a concussion. And now I feel like it's already, it's kind of, I think that's the going theory in a lot of people that it did not look like he'd really overcome all the lingering effects from his concussion in that game.
Yeah, Hoyer in the playoff game, it might have been that Sunday night New England game where Hoyer, like to your point, Seth, Hoyer had been concussed, and he came back and he looked concussed in the playoff game too. The guy turned the ball over 5 times. Either way, yes, DeAndre Hopkins snapped a little bit. At least if you read lips, he snapped in one of those games during the Hoyer era. So, yeah, join the club.
Andre's biggest moment of melting down was when he walked off the field before the half was over.
Well, against his teammate, I would say his biggest meltdown was him just throwing hands all over Cortland Finnegan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Biggest meltdown with an opponent, Finnegan. Biggest meltdown with a teammate, Schaub, 2013.
Did Arian ever have a meltdown in a game? I don't think he did. We go through notable meltdowns by great Texans players.
Yeah, Arian wasn't really prone to meltdowns like that. Like, Arian wasn't prone to outbursts like that, I don't think.
Yeah, meltdown's not the right word either, even just, like, the biggest moment of drama or anything. JJ's never had the biggest thing I can think of with JJ is when he said that he's had burritos bigger than Ray Rice.
Yeah.
Probably less abusive to burritos,
well,
too.
Or when he broke that blocking sled in Denver, and he's like, well, I guess I can't afford to fix this. I guess I'll have to use my commercial money to do it.
He said, no, yeah, commercials only pay so much. Yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was. All right, as we roll on here, we'll get to some headlines at the bottom of the hour in the final segment here. Meanwhile, we got to get into this. This happened over the weekend, and if you're somebody who is concerned about football, staying on the field, getting on the field, college football, a potential game-changing development that might be commendation-worthy. I'm not sure. I'll ask the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County, Seth Payne. A big development for keeping football on the field came over the weekend that we have to get into, and we will do it next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Appreciate you making the show a part of your day. If you're driving in, we really appreciate you tuning in throughout the morning. A reminder, 10:20 today, Bill O'Brien press conference. Noon, Anthony Weaver. 12:40, Tim Kelly. They are loaded on In the Loop today. In between all those, I'll be checking in. Practice should wrap up today around, if it's like yesterday, around 11:15 or so. So I should be on with those guys sometime. Yeah, 11:20, 11:30, somewhere in there. Wade Smith in with the guys, in for John McClain today. McClain will be on with them on Thursday. So we got you covered here for Texans training camp on Sports Radio 610 from pillar to post. From beginning to end, we've got you covered. Download that radio.com app so you can bring it with you all day long. Seth, we didn't get into this yesterday, and this is a big development, man. This came down on Saturday, and this is something that the NFL has been watching very closely. If I were the Big Ten and the Pac-12, I would go back and look at this big news item from the week and maybe reconsider my decision to cancel football in the fall this year. The NBA is actually the league that invested in what I'm about to talk about here, but it's a saliva-based COVID test with a rapid turnaround that the NBA and Yale University were the spearheads behind getting this thing, not only getting this thing manufactured, but getting it emergency approval from the FDA. And I know people may be going, well, there already is a saliva test. This is a different one. This is one that is way less expensive to produce, $4 per test cost to produce.
Right, and they think it'll cost about $15 to $20 to the consumer, which is still cheap as hell.
Yeah, absolutely, and I would imagine to these leagues, it'll cost way less than what it'll cost to the consumers because they'll be buying it in bulk. Hell, the NBA partnered with the development of it. They may get it for free. $4 per test. Rapid turnaround of learning the results within a couple of hours if you have a lab nearby, and the labs are very, very easy to get accredited. You can just bring it to any lab. It doesn't need to be a specific lab for that type of test. So a rapid turnaround of just a couple of hours, and the accuracy of it for an individual test is over 90%. So if you take two of them, which obviously is not, you're not paying through the nose to take two of them, it takes the margin for error down to under 1% in terms of false positives or negatives. So this is a huge development, Seth, that would theoretically, if we're trying to explain in plain English what this could mean for football, NFL teams could test guys the morning of games and with 99% certainty know what their COVID status is.
Well, and I think, too, and you know what? This is what I said all along, was as people criticize sports leagues for, you know, using tests that might be taking them away from the public, the sports leagues are spending above and beyond on stuff that they're not diverting anything from anything that would otherwise go to the public. And this, I think, is the chief example where they're actually spearheading innovation in it. And they donated over $500,000 to Yale, the union. They're not going to take any royalties from it. Bad move, in my opinion. I think they should have. Who's that pharmaceutical head that was so demonized because he jacked up the price on some drug by Mark Schrellig, the guy that bought What was it? Martin Schrellig.
Yeah.
He's the one that also bought the Wu-Tang Clan album. The Wu-Tang Clan put out an album that only one person was going to be allowed to have, and he bought it. People were upset about that,
too. Wow. Some random factoids in this segment from Seth.
Well, no, and one of the conditions at the time people thought that this was a condition was that one of the conditions was that at some point Bill Murray was allowed to legally try to steal it. Bill Murray stole it from him, yeah. That was later proven to be just a false rumor. But it would make sense given Wu-Tang Clan. Anyway, so this is huge for the sports. But I think with the NBA, my first reaction was, okay, well, you know who doesn't need this at all? The NBA, because they're just doing just fine without it. I think for how it might affect society at large and how it could be implemented at various places where you say, okay, look, take this test. This is what we were hoping for 4, 5, 6 months ago, right? That you could go to a game, maybe take a test, sit in a waiting area, and then they clear you to go in. We might be on the verge of having something like that. And I think that these bubbles have been very encouraging because they've actually worked. I think the more encouraging thing for me would be what Jeff Van Gundy said about the media bubble at the NBA at the NBA facility in Orlando. This is what Jeff Van Gundy said about the media bubble.
They've done a miraculous job in how they've put together these arenas the best they can for the viewing audience, the broadcasters, and the teams. I saw all these practice courts put down, you know, the weight rooms that they've installed. They really have tried to make it as good as it can be. And congratulations to everyone. I don't know who the details person is
stuff. Ben, that's okay. You can cut that up. I gave Ben the wrong numbers on there. Jeff Van Gundy, damn iTunes, they did it to me again. That was on. That was Jeff Van Gundy on the Zach Lowe podcast. Jeff Van Gundy said that the media isn't under nearly the same amount of scrutiny. They get tested twice a week, and they don't have all the security around them and everything. And that's worked really well, too. And I think with the NFL and with Major League Baseball, where players are allowed to go home when they choose, the fact that just simply being cognizant of it and being careful about it has led to these damn near 0% positive rates, I think has been really encouraging. And I think that some of the small and minor, relatively minor measures like wearing a mask and using social distancing can be very, very effective when everybody's actually motivated to do it.
Yeah, they're taking it super serious. I can just tell you from being over at NRG Stadium in the Methodist Training Center, I don't know that I shared this story on our show. I think I shared it over the weekend when you and I did Texans training camp special. But it happened Friday. Friday was the first day of practice. And as I think I've shared with the audience, each of us in the media wear a little sensor around our neck that flashes with a big red light on it when we get within 6 feet of anybody who's also wearing one of those sensors. If we get within 6 feet of somebody that we're not supposed to be within 6 feet of, it flashes. But what it also does is it absorbs and stores that data that by the end of practice, when I turn mine back in, they upload that data to the NFL. And the NFL is able to tell person to person how good each person was at social distancing during the practice. And we got a text from Amy Palsik after the first practice to all the media, to the 10 of us, saying, we didn't do a great job of social distancing, people. I'm paraphrasing. But so tomorrow, which would have been Saturday, we're going to have cones along the sidelines in the bubble, and you each get to stand next to your cone the whole practice. So they had these little cones that were probably more than 6 feet apart, probably like 8 feet apart just to be safe. And I stood next to my cone the whole time, and I told Amy about it when I got home that day. I said, "Shit, how was practice?" She said, "It was good. You know, we didn't do good at social distancing yesterday, but we did much better today." And she said, "Well, why'd you do better?" I said, "Because we each got cones and we stood next to the cones." And Amy, who teaches first grade, said, "That's kind of what we do with our first graders. When they're acting up, we make them stand somewhere to where they can't move." And I'm like, "Okay, cool. So we're basically first graders is what we are at practice." The answer, yes. That's what we are.
Sometimes that's how I have to treat people, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
The third graders.
We've been doing a lot better, though, with that.
So, I like I said, the NBA is doing just fine.
Yeah.
They're going to roll on through this like it's nothing. I guess that's the – I think that moving forward, the hopeful thing that maybe comes out from all of this after COVID is over is that they've developed strategies and abilities to develop things more quickly, hopefully, you know, and that maybe – maybe just in the testing alone, you could be more specific and localized with how you address these things. Like, ideally, in an ideal world, before we got so super mobile all the time, you could just figure, oh, there's an outbreak in this city. Shut this city down real quick. Let the local authorities take care of it. We'll test like hell. And then never blossoms out into what it turned into.
Real quick. Should the Big Ten reconsider its decision to have a football season based on the information surrounding this saliva test?
I think they should, but are the wheels already too far in motion?
I don't think so. The college football's making this stuff up as they go. The SEC just released its schedule yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine in his state. They made a lot of decisions really early on what they were going to cancel, and they couldn't really figure out why. You know, like they just, and I think I think a well-intentioned desire to get ahead of things and not get caught with your pants down, some kind of far-reaching decisions were made perhaps earlier than they should have been. Yeah, maybe the Big Ten and the Pac-12 can reassess based on the economics of it.
Yeah.
If you can do that, if you can run these tests for less than 15, you know, like you said, there'll be a discount. If it's going to be available to consumers at $15 or $20, they can probably run it at less than $10, that maybe it's more manageable.
Seth, these Big Ten schools can probably find donors that'll duke a six-figure check to help with the cost of testing if that's what's going to get football back on the field.
Oh, yeah, there's some car dealer in Columbus alone
that
could handle all the testing.
Absolutely.
And then he could sponsor it as the, you know, Jim Bob's Ram dealership.
Jim Bob Nissan COVID testing. Yeah.
Yeah.
What Jim Bob? Columbus, Ohio.
Jim Bob Cooter. I'm basing all of that on Jim Cooter. I'm going to name my, if I ever have a son, I'm going to name him Jim Bob.
Name of an actual NFL coach who played quarterback at Tennessee, Jim Bob Cooter. Look it up, folks. What do we think Bill O'Brien is thinking if he is seeing the early DeAndre Hopkins stories out of Arizona? We'll talk about that next. We were talking earlier about haikus, that I need to show Keon Crossan a haiku that I wrote. Keon Crossan, Texans defensive back, keeps coming up to me during practice and looking at my notes. He's very curious. So I keep telling him that I'm writing haikus, which led our friend Ocho on the text page to pen this haiku on the text page. Now, keep in mind, haikus need to be 5-7-5. Five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. Here's Ocho, noted Kyler Murray honk. "There is really no doubt Kyler Cole Murray is the absolute GOAT. You mofos need to recognize." Ocho, that's 6-11-8. That's not even close to a haiku. That's just your verbal diarrhea about Kyler Cole Murray is what that is.
His attention to detail is what would doom a young player just like Kyler Murray if he got to the NFL. Looks like Kyler Murray does pay attention to detail, so I think he'll be all right.
Yeah.
But Ocho didn't even try. It's not like he got one line wrong or anything.
Yeah.
How many? What syllables did he get?
6-11-8.
So he wasn't even close.
Not even close. Ocho, just because you put it in all caps doesn't make it a haiku all of a sudden. Just because I...
makes it a little bit more impressive. I don't, honestly, I never got the haiku. Yeah. I don't get that at all. Give me a limerick. A limerick, you can do something with that. Yeah. You can work with a limerick.
Limerick's about Nantucket. Yeah.
You know how much catchier dirty limericks are? Nobody talks about dirty haikus.
That's right.
You can't fit the filth into that format.
Speaking of Kyler Cole Murray, his new teammate is DeAndre Hopkins. Seth, I'm just going to read some of the things here that Pro Football Talk has about DeAndre Hopkins' first week at Cardinals practice, and then I want you to tell me what you think Bill O'Brien's reaction might be to some of this news. Cardinals wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins has been missing practices with a hamstring injury, but questions have been raised about whether he might actually be sitting out of practice because he's unhappy with his contract. Hopkins has now answered those questions definitively, and he answered them on Twitter. He said no. He went third person. He said no, DeAndre Hopkins is not holding out, from the source. So that's on Twitter. The thought is, by folks who may be a little skeptical of this, is that the rules are much stricter now with holdouts. You know, when there were people saying, well, you know, I could see why the Texans might move on from him. What if he held out and he didn't want to come in because he's got 3 years left on his deal that are, you know, that have him paid $12, $13 million a year when top-of-line receivers are getting over 20 now? What if he held out? Well, the thing now is with the new CBA, the holdout rules, teams cannot forgive fines. And the fines are $50,000 a day. So he holds out a week, he's out $350,000. Period, end of story. You cannot forgive those fines. So the thinking is, by people who might be a little bit skeptical of Hopkins, is that he's doing just enough to say he's in camp, but he's just injured, air quotes, enough to where he doesn't have to practice.
It's the old soft holdout.
Right.
We wondered at times whether Jadeveon Clowney was doing that a couple years ago.
Right, right.
And it's hard to say because look at what's going on with the Texans camp. J.J. Watt hasn't practiced since they've been in pads, and it has zero to do with any kind of a holdout. It's because they're taking care of the veteran players. You know, a lot of the older veteran players haven't done much. And DeAndre didn't necessarily practice a whole lot when he was here with the Texans. I guess, would O'Brien be like doing the Kermit the Frog sipping the tea emoji over this? I'm not sure. I think just because I think Arians probably might have treated DeAndre Hopkins this way anyway. Unless there's actual... Kingsbury.
Arians might too, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, Sean. Yeah, I'm going around the league. All NFL coaches.
Who would handle Hopkins this way?
And then historic coaches too. Tony Dungy, would he do it?
Should be a hell of a segment.
Or we can go all former, we'll go all former Cardinals coaches.
Right. So Kingsbury.
Wizenhunt definitely wouldn't.
Right.
So I think that there's nothing to see here yet, I suppose. If all of a sudden there's reports that DeAndre Hopkins is disgruntled or something, I think then Bill O'Brien can start doing the Kermit the Frog thing.
Yeah, I honest with you, Seth, I think O'Brien's got too much on his plate right now to be worrying about DeAndre Hopkins' hamstring injury. My guess is if somebody walked by Hopkins in the hallway and said, hey, did you hear DeAndre's not practicing because of a hamstring? My guess is that O'Brien would probably maybe go kind of nod his head and go, yeah, I mean, that sounds about right. Like, he didn't practice much here with a variety of ailments as well. You know, this is in some ways, this is par for the course for DeAndre Hopkins.
The other side of that trade, obviously, was David Johnson. Yeah. And David Johnson was the subject of an article by Tyler Dunn in the Bleacher Report yesterday. It was a really, really long article. You should read it if you've got some time on your hands. But it's a good article, and it's about David Johnson and kind of the chip that David Johnson has on his shoulder. And I got excited about it as I was reading this thing because I think that David Johnson might be just a guy that needs a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I hate to say it because that kind of matches up with the fact that he hasn't produced at all since he got his big contract. But he seems really, really ready to, and he seems like he really wants to prove people wrong this year.
It's a really good article. Seth, the things that jumped out at me, to back up what you're saying, the things that jumped out at me in this article was Johnson was very clear about being kind of snowed under by the social media reaction to the trade. He was caught a little off guard by just how negative it got on social media about his role in this deal, to the point where he felt like it was really people around the league, some of his peers, some of the people who cover the league, blue check marks, as he called them in the article, that really kind of fed into the narrative that led to the average fans coming at him on direct messages on Twitter and Instagram, talking about what a horrible trade this was for the Houston Texans. That was number one. There were stories, though, about his recruitment out of high school. He was from a small town in Iowa. but he really didn't get recruited all that hard by the two big in-state schools, Iowa and Iowa State, to the point that Kirk Ferentz, the longtime coach at Iowa, Johnson remembers Ferentz questioning Johnson to his face during his recruitment, saying he didn't do enough when he didn't have the ball in his hands. Paul Rhodes, who was the Iowa State coach at the time, told Johnson flat out he just wasn't good enough to be a running back at the Division I level, wanted to try him at linebacker, and then sent him a form letter to basically say thanks, no thanks, kind of cut short the recruitment of him, in which he addressed the letter to David Jacobson, not David Johnson. So this is something, Seth, and again, that fueled him. When he got to Northern Iowa, the Northern Iowa coach didn't want to make him a running back. He wanted to be a running back. He finally got his chance to get his hands on the ball, and he was incredible. When he got to the Cardinals, Arians was there at the time, and he was running with the third string, and Arians was a guy who did not like, still doesn't like, rookies. Johnson had to prove himself. David Johnson might be the perfect guy to have on this team for like a year or two. You know what I mean? Like they may have caught him. He's a little expensive. I get that. But they might have caught him, to your point, at just the perfect time. Completely disrespected and dismissed by everybody around the league with a year or two left on his deal, with something to prove, in really good shape. I can tell you from watching him out there at practice, he looks good. I don't know if this is going to translate when the season starts into a 1,500-yard year. But Seth, the other big takeaway from this article, David Johnson has a goal of going 1,000-1,000 this year. He wants to go Roger Craig, 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving.
Yeah, and look, I'm all for it. And that's what I've been saying is I hope he has a chip on his shoulder. I would almost be worried if David Johnson come in here and said, hey, same old, same as the last few years. I will say, in this article, he acts like people are crazy for doubting him. It's been 3 years, you know, and there are various excuses that could be legitimate excuses or reasons that he hasn't produced. But with running backs especially, if you haven't done anything in the last 3 years noteworthy, it's just the statistics are stacked up against you. It's reasonable that people should have their doubts, but it's also reasonable and actually desirous. It's actually desired for him to get offended by that.
Yeah,
I'm not going to sit here, but like, no, be rational, David. Just settle down. Don't be angry. I want him to be angry.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Seth. Isn't putting a chip on your shoulder, isn't being illogical, at least somewhat illogical, kind of part of the formula for putting a chip on your shoulder sometimes?
If people
are doubting you, there's usually reasons for it that are based in something that's not just completely personal. You know,
look at Tom Brady and the Patriots in general. Like, Belichick does a great job of making that team think. That team thinks that the rest of the country doesn't respect them, despite the fact that in any given year they were the Super Bowl favorites.
Right.
You know, yeah, they do a really good job of just talking yourself into having fake enemies. I got to do that more. I'm going to do it with my wife today. I'm just going to see how it goes if I just imagine a bunch of transgressions that she's made against me.
You're going to make Brandy your fake enemy today.
I'm going to go down. Yeah, I'm going to go back and I'm going to be like, you don't respect me, do you? Mm. And then I'm going to go do something better.
Seth, there are other ways to go about getting an endorsement from a divorce attorney. You could just go to sales and ask. You know, you don't have to apply it in real life. All right, but my other big takeaway, I think O'Brien loves David Johnson. I think O'Brien loves David Johnson. David Johnson's taking every rep at practice. He looks to
be
in great shape.
That. He needs to stop that. O'Brien needs to stop loving David Johnson because that's not what David Johnson needs. Bill O'Brien needs to act like he doesn't expect anything out of David Johnson.
Mm.
And then David Johnson will have to – he'll have an axe to grind to prove Bill O'Brien wrong.
I think even when you have a chip on your shoulder, you need to be loved by at least one person. And I feel O'Brien was that person for David Johnson. Like, no, but here – Seth, the last takeaway on this article, then we'll get to headlines – it does almost feel like O'Brien and Johnson are sort of in this foxhole together. That's the picture.
That's a good point.
That's the picture that David Johnson painted, and that he painted that O'Brien is kind of saying with him, like, "Hey, we're gonna prove the doubters wrong," kind of thing. You know, like they're in this together. O'Brien wants great success for Johnson because it'll mean good things for the team, and it'll certainly mean good things for O'Brien personally if that trade ends up working out to some degree. And for Johnson, He wants to prove O'Brien right. So I feel like they're like a tag team in this whole. They are a tag team of shoulder chippedness is what they are. Yeah. Let's do headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Speaking of the Texans, they open September 10th, Thursday. They open the season with the Kansas City Chiefs. They open the entire season for the NFL. And when that game is televised on Thursday night on, I don't know if that's a Fox or an NBC joint, the opening weekend, there will be fans in the stands as of right now. Kansas City, the Chiefs announcing yesterday that they have a plan in place to sell single game tickets for the first three games of the season, which would include the season opener. Seth, a crowd of 22% of capacity at Arrowhead Stadium will be there. I guess on the surface you go, boy, it sure would be nice to have zero fans in there because that means there'd be no noise. I don't feel like 22% of a crowd is going to be something the Texans should really worry about. If anything, it might normalize things a little bit.
I wonder, look, I'm not a sound engineer, John. Sean, I don't know if you know that. I barely know your name.
Right.
I don't know if 22,000 people spread out throughout the stadium can make the noise, whereas I know that I've been in stadiums before. I've played in games where there were enough of traveling Texans, like in one section, that when you got down to the end zone and they were sitting in the end zone, it got pretty loud in that end zone. Like, I felt like it actually caused issues for the home team's quarterback. But this is going to be different. They're going to be all spread out. And I think I'm with you. I don't think they're going to be able to make enough noise to affect Deshaun Watson.
The Bears announced yesterday they won't have fans in the stands when they open the season. The Texans, of course, as we all know, announced it on Friday. I guess just bigger picture, what do you read into this? What do you think this means, Seth? Do you think this means that they're – are we trending this way in the NFL to where, hey, getting the first round bye may actually mean something when the postseason rolls around as far as fans being in the stands? Are we at the whims of the public government in each of these places? Do you have any big picture thoughts on it?
I just think that each team's going to be completely different, right? I think that just like each college football conference is completely different and is making their own decisions, some of these teams are going to have fans and some of them aren't. And somebody's going to try to push the envelope, Jerry Jones.
Yeah, well, Jerry Jones wants to do something similar to what the Chiefs are doing with the pods.
I also wonder, I think Ben DuBose, say this. I wonder if the Chiefs were going to try to go 24% just as a little bit of a troll on the 24-0 lead the Texans had. And if somebody talked them out of it, this is a little much.
I would actually admire that. That would be pretty funny. Next headline, the Astros, they win their fifth straight last night. So 7-10 just less than a week ago, but five straight wins in which they've given up a total of six runs. The pitching has been lights out over these last five games, which is good because the offense is still struggling a little bit. Yordan Alvarez, he announced his presence with authority on Friday when he came back hitting a three-run homer in his first at-bat. Since then, the big story with Yordan Alvarez is knee soreness. He missed the second straight game yesterday. An MRI coming back negative for any damage to the knee, but we'll see if he plays today. It's a 2-10 start for the Astros today. Here is Dusty Baker's update on Yordan Alvarez.
We'll probably hear something, you know, in the morning before we go to, you know, on the road. And so we're hoping for, you know, decent news. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what the news is going to be. So we just have to wait till tomorrow.
Seth, with the health of all these guys on this team, my view of the Astros is, hey, go win as many games as you can, but just kind of keep this whole thing together, load manage properly, and let's just be ready when October gets here. Let's just make sure you're one of the eight teams that's in the tournament. You know what
I mean? Well, right now, I mean, if you look at any batting category, they're right around 15th through 20th, you know, and that's not what this lineup is capable of. I feel like that's going to swing back up. I'm almost kind of glad that that's where they are right now. Because other than Altuve, who knows what the hell's actually going on and what's going to happen with him, the rest of those guys are going to be more their historical norms, you know, by the end of the season and especially by the playoffs. So I don't worry about the lineup. And I think that this pitching staff is starting to kind of show its which guys are mature, which guys can handle the pressure and the stress. Belak operates out there like a veteran player, and he gets himself out of fixes. He's just calm, cool, and collected. I don't know what his upside is. I don't think he's ever going to be a Cy Young candidate or anything like that. But right now, they've got the fifth best ERA in baseball. And if they can sustain that, the bullpen is looking more and more. The bullpen creates less stress and fear than it did. Even Josh James last night was all right. He's still going to stress me out every time he comes in. But still, I'm feeling better and better. I feel way better than I did a week ago about all this.
Elephant in the room that you and I haven't talked about, you mentioned Altuve. Where are you at with Altuve asking to be bumped down in the order? You cool with him doing that? Or
yeah.
when he did that, were you like,
I'm cool with it.
I hate it.
Except that I think right now, this is what you worry with Altuve. Altuve, through this whole ordeal, his own good nature is kind of his greatest undoing, I think. For one, you know, he didn't go along with a cheating scheme, and yet he's the face of it now. And he's not going to speak up because he doesn't want to throw his teammates under the bus. So he's still really not defending himself that well. And I think some of the other players would really like to defend Altuve, but I feel like their marching orders are don't discuss the cheating scandal at all.
Yes.
You know? And I think that Altuve, I think this weighs on Altuve. It just it looks like it. I don't like being body language analysis guy, but my God, just look at him. He looks and it feels like he's just having a different experience this year. And the weight of that whole scandal is unjustifiably on him.
I don't like him asking down in the order. And I know everybody's like, look how classy it is. He's doing what's great for the team. I like to see great hitters given an opportunity and embracing the opportunity to hit their way out of it.
Yeah, I guess that's where I was leading with it was it's almost him being such a good guy is almost you almost wish he was just a brash, arrogant a-hole.
Yeah.
But then he wouldn't be Altuve.
Yes, yeah.
Like the best way to combat this and fight through this is to have an attitude kind of like Bregman or kind of like Correa or kind of like
Springer.
Yeah, but it's less so Springer. Like Springer's not as brash as those guys.
Or Yuli.
Was that Yuli?
Or Yuli is just like YOLO. You know, like hey, I'm just gonna keep swinging from the from my heels, and we'll see what happens. NBA.
And let me also add though. And maybe it's none of that at all. Maybe it's just the same thing that's going on with Cody Bellinger or any of these other really good hitters who are having a really hard time adjusting to this weird year.
Could be. Next headline, NBA playoffs got started yesterday. Some fun games in the Western Conference, the Eastern Conference kind of, which is about what both conferences have been advertised as heading into the playoffs. An overtime game to start things off. Nothing like a 12:30 Central Time game between Utah and Denver on a Monday to get the NBA playoffs kicked off. The Mavericks and Clippers game last night had all kinds of storylines and drama in it, including Kristaps Porzingis getting unfairly kicked out of the game. So that was cool. But today, main event kind of stuff if you live here in Houston, Oklahoma City and the Rockets getting things going in game one, 5:30 tip tonight. Russell Westbrook had another MRI yesterday. I guess sort of standard procedure with this injury. He will miss the game tonight. So it is Harden versus CP3. But James Harden insists not personal with his former teammate.
I don't ever take anything personal. I'm trying to win a game, and I'm trying to win a playoff series. And I'm taking one possession at a time, one game at a time. And you know, I think my role in this team, obviously, is to go out there and perform at a high level, but just to be a leader and making sure that the guys that are around me are all have that same mindset. And if I can do that, then, like I said, we give ourselves a chance to win, especially, you know, with Russell being out.
Translation. Somebody going to die. That's what I read between the lines.
Buy that for one second,
cold,
James.
Cold face killer right there, James Harden.
Yeah, yeah. The fire hose of sports is here, Seth. 2:10 first pitch for the Astros, 5:30 tip for the Rockets tonight.
It's a whole long stretch of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Just, okay, let's not do this extra innings thing tonight, Astros, or this afternoon.
Right.
Let's just go ahead and take care of business.
Yeah, do that thing where you've been giving up one run per game. Then the puzzle pieces will fit perfectly on the TV grid this afternoon. It'll be really good. What's your excitement level, given all the things good and bad going on with the Rockets right now?
With the Rockets, I guess it's my trepidation level. Okay. This is, and it's, I used to, you know, criticize Meltzer for this. Sometimes Mike would go into a game worried about all the worst case scenarios and to the point where it affects your enjoyment of the game. I'm worried about the worst case scenario here, which is that without Russell Westbrook.
And it's affecting my enjoyment of the game.
Yes, and it's affecting my, like, until Russell Westbrook is back out there in the fold, I'm going to be really, really nervous about this, which has added more juice to it. I think with Russell Westbrook, I might just casually, you know, watch this game while browsing the internet or something. But now I'm going to be dialed in and engaged the whole time.
Should be fun. 5:30 tonight, that tip-off. Seth, last headline here. Gerald McCoy signing for the Cowboys in the offseason. They've signed a lot of kind of low-cost veterans who have things on their resume. Everson Griffin, the most recent one, and they're probably thanking their lucky stars they signed Everson Griffin for some depth along the defensive line because Gerald McCoy tore an ACL in practice yesterday.
Quad. He tore a quad.
Oh, was it a quad? Okay, I saw ACL in the first reports, so it was a quad. Okay.
Yeah, it was ugly. You can watch the video. It was not graphically ugly, but just when you can't see anything sticking
out
or anything.
That's worse.
But it looked like you could just tell, oh, wow, he just had a really bad injury.
Yeah, torn quad is worse. From what I hear, that's a much more grueling rehab than the ACL. But he out for the season. Look, the Texans did not make a lot of signings like this, like the Cowboys did. I guess this is one of those check the Carfax buyer beware things of signing a veteran guy that's had some injury issues.
Yeah, and I think this is where I need to go back and revise some of my opinions from earlier in the year. It's not like I was clamoring for Everson Griffin or Gerald McCoy. I thought they would have been nice additions and maybe a luxury purchase because, look, you need extra pass rushers out there. But now as I watched Gerald McCoy get injured, I remembered, oh, yeah, wait a second. You don't want to have too many older, injury-prone defensive linemen. And frankly, right now, J.J. Watt is an injury concern. So just from a roster-building standpoint, I'll say I think O'Brien did the right thing as the general manager this offseason. They went after Timmy Jernigan, which didn't work out, but that was a very reasonable contract, and I think that would have been a smart signing. Gerald McCoy, Dontari Poe, Everson Griffin, a lot of older guys that could potentially have those same issues.
All right, Seth, we are about out of time. Texans Training Camp Live is up next. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies to you.
All right, I'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow, my friend. I will be out of Texans practice today, checking in with In the Loop and the afternoon show, Clint Sterner in the show with my updates. Bill O'Brien, 10:20. Anthony Weaver, 12 o'clock. Tim Kelly, 12:40. Keep it right here. Texans Training Camp coverage all day long. Texans Training Camp Live next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.